This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Hi, I'm Peter Terzakian. Welcome back to our podcast. It's November 23rd, 2018.
And I'm Jackie Forrest. And today I'm excited. We have our very first guest on our podcast. Welcome, Todd Hirsch, Chief Economist, ATB Financial. In case you don't know him, he's a well-known economist, speaker, author, and thought leader on the Alberta economy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Well, you know, Alberta economy, I think everybody knows, is dependent upon the oil and gas business. Jackie and I in our previous podcasts have talked extensively about the oil and gas price and some of the travails surrounding that. I mean, how are you seeing oil and gas in our economy these days?
Well, I always joke. I mean, this is energy is the dog that wags an awful lot of tails in this province. And you don't need to be here for very long to understand how important it is for our economy. It was the single economic factor back in 2014 and 2015, the drop of oil price, that pushed our economy into a two-year tailspin recession. So you really can't overestimate how significant the energy sector is to the province, and not just directly. I mean, only a small minority of people directly work for an energy-producing company, but all the indirect ripple effects that are felt across the province, it is a very significant
sector. Yeah, it's very significant. I mean, let's just take our mind back to pre-price crash, late 2014, 2015. Our GDP was running at what, like 5-6% at that time?
First 5 years of this decade, we were running 4-5. 1 year, it was 6.3%. That's real GDP growth. So adjusting for inflation.
So post-crash, I mean, it wasn't a recession. It was actually a contraction, wasn't it?
Very severe contraction.
The economy not only stopped growing, it actually contracted.
Oh, yeah. Right. Two consecutive years, 2015, 2016 combined, we contracted almost 8% real GDP.
Wow.
It's almost unheard of, you know, in a modern sort of Western developed economy or province. So again, it just really underscores how significant that oil drop was.
So talk about 17. That's where we started to come out of it, right?
Well, 2017, actually, believe it or not, we actually led the provinces in GDP growth. We grew by 4.4%. Which, I mean, that outpaced any other province. And when I talk about that, I always get people shaking their head in disbelief. They think Stats Canada got the numbers wrong. There's no way they believed that 2017 was a strong year for growth. But I guess squaring the circle, it didn't feel like strong growth because we had contracted 8%. You don't actually need that much more activity to come trickling back to get 4.4% growth. But we're still only halfway out of the hole.
Right. Like the economy still isn't at the level it was before the downturn. So that's where the disconnect is, right?
That's right.
And businesses even, don't have the kind of amount of work or revenues that they had back then.
That's right. And even with growth this year, we're estimating about 2.5%. And even with maybe 2% in 2019, it's going to take us to the end of 2019 to get back to the size of economy we were in 2014. That statistic kind of connects or resonates more with Calgarians and Albertans who really feel like, no, this is not a fast-growing place.
Yeah. Well, we'll come to different parts of the province in a minute, but I mean, there's some dynamics here of the 2.8% growth that you cite for 18 and 19 that are a bit different, right? We've got immigration happening, like inflows of people coming here.
We have international migration is positive, and that remained positive, by the way, right through the recession. But the big piece of it was interprovincial in migration. We lost interprovincially during the recession, 8 consecutive quarters or 2 years of net outflow of people to other provinces.
Building condos in Vancouver.
But actually, when you look at other recessions, say the 1980s, for example, or even some of the recessions in the 90s or the early 2000s, the proportion of net outflow that we experienced in 2015-16 actually was more of a trickle of people flowing out. That was because, I mean, you could pack up and leave Alberta, but where are you going to go? You can go to BC, where wages are actually below the national average, and you have to live in a bus shelter because you can't afford to, you know, live there. You could go to Ontario, but again, you're looking at higher housing costs. So more people during the recession opted just to stay put. And that is also what pushed the unemployment rate above 10% here in Calgary.
What is it now?
In Calgary, it's still above 8%, 7.3% provincially.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I just saw you put out the OWL newsletters on your website. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But you had something on the unemployment insurance levels really coming down recently. So do you take that as a positive sign that there's more jobs suddenly?
Well, I mean, we look at a lot of different indicators around the labor market because each one tells a piece of the story that's going on. You never want to look at just one in isolation. The unemployment insurance or the employment insurance number is coming down, but it's also the fact that people are just running out of eligible weeks. So they might be finding work or they might just be exhausting all of their weeks of eligibility, which is really what you don't want to see. Mm-hmm. And that number of people who are still unemployed but now have no EI support, that number is growing and that is a bit troubling.
Right, because there was a new policy put in place by the Liberal government, right, that they would extend that for 2 years or something like
That's right. They did extend it. The number of weeks of eligibility, I think they extended to 55 weeks from 42 weeks or something. And that helped. But, you know, we're still butting up against that. People are running out of weeks of eligibility.
Right, they're running out of time there.
Yeah.
Well, so that's interesting that people didn't leave the province to the same extent. But I guess that speaks to Alberta, I've seen metrics, is actually doing pretty well in terms of our average income for the people that are working relative to other parts of the country.
That's right. We've always, well, for many, many years, our incomes, average weekly earnings have been far above the national average and the highest in the country. And that is still the case for people who are working. For people who have lost their jobs and their income goes to zero, the way Stats Canada does the employment survey or the survey of weekly earnings, it's only of employees. So if you are no longer an employee, you kind of drop out of the survey and that zero income that you're bringing in doesn't really get factored in. So wages are coming down. And if you factor in the people who are earning no income, they're coming down even more sharply. But even in spite of all of that, average earnings in Alberta are, well, they're closer to the national average now, but they're still above.
Right. Well, and it makes sense then. If there's no jobs other places, why wouldn't you stay here where you have a chance of getting a higher salary potentially than moving?
Well, that's right. Yeah.
But the reality is if your EI benefits run out and it doesn't look like there's anything here, you have two options. One is occupational change your vocation and look for a job in a different discipline, which, you know, first, certainly the older demographic is very difficult to do.
Yeah.
Or move to a different part of the country that does have employment, which is also difficult.
One of the things that we think kept more people in place is that in 2018, disproportionately, we have more two-income households than, say, we did in the 80s. Hmm. It's not that everyone is two-income households, but if you have at least one income coming in, now, if both income earners lose their jobs, then you're in real trouble.
That's bad news.
But if you've got one income coming in, the decision to pack up and leave is tougher because if you packed up and, you know, moved to Ontario, well, now you're both unemployed, you know, and starting from scratch. And you might have a hard time selling your home here in Calgary. With really low interest rates, mortgage rates, it was easy to refinance some of those mortgages. So we didn't see the same level of household insolvency and defaults on mortgages, nowhere close to what we saw in the 80s. And in fact, nowhere close to even what we saw in 2009 in that recession.
Now, within the province, you know, province isn't all uniform. We model investment in the oil and gas sector. And in 2018, we've had, and 17 as well, we've had a real rebound in terms of the level of spending in the oil and gas industry. But interestingly enough, it's really shifted from primarily in a lot of spending in the oil sands to seeing much more of the percentage of spending being in the non-oil sands, really centered around the Grand Prairie area, down to Fox Creek and Whitecourt, because we've seen that types of wells that are being invested in that area actually make a lot of sense, even at the lower commodity prices where the oil sands needs the higher price. Have you seen in the numbers, are those areas seeing better results in terms of unemployment and growth?
Yeah, definitely. The two areas of the province that are probably doing the best right now are Grand Prairie and Lethbridge for very different reasons. Lethbridge never really even saw any kind of recession. They have very little exposure to oil downturn. For them, it's agriculture, it's light manufacturing, it's food processing, it's government. They've got a university and a large community college. They got the Ag Canada Research Center. So they didn't even see a recession. And I was just actually down there last week speaking. And things there are still pretty good. They're kind of even, Stephen. They never really boom, but they never bust.
So they're diversified, really.
They're more diversified and particularly diversified away. They have very little oil
Right. But Jackie's the hometown girl from Grand Prairie, she's dying to hear about what you're going to say about that.
Well, Grand Prairie does tend to boom and bust a little bit more, but again, their strength is more diversity. So they do have, they have exposure to energy for sure, but it's more on the gas side, I would say, and what's happening in northeastern BC, oil as well. But they also have a very dominant agriculture and agri-food sector and forestry. Mm-hmm. And forestry is doing really well. So it's sort of, you've got three pistons, and as long as at least two of the pistons are doing okay, your city's
and agricultural technology is really coming along, right, with all the high-tech drones and GPS and you name it.
I've always said, I think people in Alberta, especially, you know, those of us in the large cities, we tend to forget about agriculture.
Yeah.
And we tend to have an incorrect view of how technologically sophisticated agriculture is in 2018. It is probably, and it always sort of has been, kind of leading edge in some of the technologies, you know, the GPS and the drone technologies, mm-hmm. and different ways of increasing efficiencies and increasing output.
How much is agriculture in our economy?
It's not very much. It's 2 or 3%. But when you start, again, looking at the ripple effects, so, you know, a lot of those small towns, not even some of them so small, but a lot of the business services in those towns depend on agriculture.
Yeah.
So when you just look at the GDP, you know, the pie chart with all the different sectors, well, a portion of retail, if you're a farm implement retailer in Red Deer, well, you're really in agriculture, right? Even though statistically you would be counted as business services. Hmm. So it's kind of like the energy sector. It has a disproportionate ripple effect. Agriculture, too. Agriculture output, only about 2, maybe 3% of Alberta's GDP. But the ripple effect is felt far wider.
Right.
Okay, well, let's move on to Fort McMurray. And by the way, I know you're an expert on all these places because I follow you on Twitter.
Every one of them.
And you always post like the pictures and get people to guess where you are, and you have covered the province backwards and
you have
forward.
To find a pretty small town I've never been to in this province.
So Fort McMurray, have you been up there recently? What's the economy like? You know, the oil sands spending, by the way, is about a third of what it was a few years ago. Yeah. Real pullback in oil
sands spending.
It's like
$40 billion down to $12
billion
or something.
Yes.
Like it's, yeah.
Fort McMurray is a special case. I was there about 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, I guess, and it's not doing well. But it's the people in that community, I don't want to say they're used to it, but you become a bit immune to these booms and busts. So no one in Fort McMurray is happy about it. But then again, they're not really surprised and they're not really devastated. Yeah, people have left. Some people didn't come back after the fire. But I would always challenge anybody to go up and actually spend time in Fort McMurray. And you really start to see the cohesion.
It's a nice community.
It's a really nice community. And you have people there that are dedicated to, you know, building that community and making it a great place to live.
Right. What about Edmonton versus Calgary? What do you think?
Edmonton is doing better. But again, Edmonton didn't see the depth of the recession that Calgary saw. In fact, you know, when you look at the depth of the recession, and even now coming out of it, the very worst 10 square blocks in the province are in downtown Calgary. That's sort of ground zero, because that's where a lot of the jobs were lost, and they were high-paying jobs, very high-skilled jobs, and jobs that are often hard to sort of translate into other sectors. So
right.
If you're a highly specialized geologist or petrochemical engineer, or it's hard to say, well, I'm going to explore, you know, a career in agriculture, which is doing actually not too bad. So downtown Calgary and Calgary in general has been hit the hardest. The unemployment rate in Calgary, still the highest of any major city in the country. Edmonton, more diversified. I mean, it's the seat of government. They've got the larger university there. They've got more of the light manufacturing. A lot of it also connected to the energy sector, for sure.
Right.
But
it's interesting, the oil industry dynamic with all these specialized people. But those who are working are still very high income.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what happened, and you guys would know far more about this than I ever will, but I think what happened is the energy sector getting their costs down, they did this by eliminating 25% of their workforce. And they probably did it by eliminating maybe the 25 least efficient, or maybe even those that were hired perhaps superfluously. Is that a word?
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. There was because there was massive labor skills shortages all the way from boardrooms to the oil fields up to 2014.
Yeah.
But there is a dynamic here that I think is overlooked. There's no question that the industry trimmed the fat, so to speak. They had to.
They had to.
Because the price of oil fell from 100 plus down to 35, I think, at its low point, right? So, but the other dynamic is this whole data science, the new types of software and so on, where a geologist or petroleum engineer or whatever can do the job of two or three people compared to only half a dozen years ago with the new computer-aided tools.
Well, and that's what I've always said about the energy sector. It really is a great example of an adapter, because what it's doing now in this lower price environment, in the Western Canadian price, which we might talk about, you know, it's terrible. But a lot of them are managing to stay afloat because they've made use of robotics, of artificial intelligence, of technology, which is really what economists love to see. So that's the good news. The bad news is we are not seeing the energy sector returning as that engine of employment that a lot of people in
Alberta
are.
And the character is different. You have to be even higher skilled to be able to bring it. But if you do, the wages are still hard to beat.
That's right.
Yeah, but I would agree, you know, if we get a big run-up in oil price, I don't know that there'll be a bunch of hiring as there was back in 2014, because of this automation. Also, we're not building those big mega projects. A lot of that drove the jobs was these massive projects and all the engineering work needed for them. And if we're not going to be building, you know, the $14 billion oil mine, you're not going to have that run-up in work as well.
And you won't even need the planners and the project coordinators here in Calgary that are kind of driving the future growth of those.
Right. We'll just drive around town and look at these EPC buildings. You know, they're pretty empty.
But I would argue, you know, it has the potential for change. Right. We're going to talk about that when we talk about the value add opportunity, which could necessitate the need for a lot of new infrastructure. But before we get to that, you want to talk a little bit about your outlook for 19? Talk.
Yeah. Well, I always like to joke the secret to good forecasting is revise frequently.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're also in that business right now.
And my team.
Or don't commit.
Or don't commit. Yeah. Or say, well, it's contingent on things we don't know about yet. Every quarter, my economics and research team at ATB Financial, we do take a look at our model assumptions and we make any tweaks and adjustments if necessary. Our forecast for 2019 is calling for real GDP growth in Alberta, 2.3%. That's not bad. It probably will come in close to the Canadian average. The problem is for Alberta, that's roughly half the rate of growth that we're used to. And it's too slow a rate of growth to get that unemployment rate down very quickly. And that is what's leading to the discouragement and disappointment, because we now have a moderately growing economy. I don't even want to call it slow growing, because a lot of places in the world would love 2.5%
growth. I was going to say, like, 2.5% is not that bad.
It's not
that
bad.
It's just that it's not absorbing the slack that's been created
as
a consequence of what happened in 1415.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, though, if it's going to turn out even that good, actually. You know, we've been tracking the slide of the oil price. First, we had the wide diffs that sort of appeared this fall, and then we've seen the headline price of oil come down and keep stepping the prices down here in Western Canada to the point where we have some of the lowest prices we've ever seen, like lower than in 2016. So we're sitting here at about under $20 a barrel right now for Western Canadian Select, and the mid-20s for light oil out of Western Canada. Gas prices have recovered here temporarily, I think, though. By the end of the first quarter, they're back to the lowest prices we've seen in 20 years. And so we've been kind of revising our model in terms of, at these different price levels, how much money would the industry have to spend, assuming they just have their cash flow, because there's not a lot of external capital for the industry at this point in the cycle. And, you know, we went from beginning of October saying spending will be the same next year, because actually there's enough cash flow to support that, to, if I ran it on the futures in early November, we'd be talking about potentially a 30 or 40% reduction in activity levels next year. And that's if the future strip is correct, which does recover quite a bit over the year.
Those are the forward prices?
Yeah. So using the forward prices with the futures market, there's actually quite a recovery from where we are to the end of 19. So using that, we still don't have enough money to spend anything close to what we did last year. So I just wonder how companies are going to react to this. You know, we're waiting to get the guidance from many of the public companies. So far, there hasn't been a big reduction in their spending levels over next year, but
there has not.
There has not, which is surprising, but we've only had a handful of companies. I wouldn't want to judge
this differential issue is only like a month old in terms of its severity.
That's right.
And usually it takes, by the way, we model it, about 6-month lag before it really hits the economy.
Yeah, and these prices are severe. Like, This year, we're expecting $50 billion of cash flow out of the industry, about. And if we were to run today's spot prices right now, and assume they lasted for a year, which I don't think they are, but let you know how severe they are, there'd be almost no cash flow coming out of the industry. Low the prices are right now.
But we know from our previous podcast, I mean, these arbitrage situations, as we said, they don't typically last. And the more severe it is, the faster remedies typically come in to equalize the market. Right.
So. And I think they will improve, but I just wonder how companies are going to look at this.
Is this going to have an effect?
Yeah, they're budgeting right now.
Todd, does your 2.3% for next year, does it weigh in like what's happened here in the last 4 or 6 weeks?
Not what's happened in the last 4 to 6 weeks. And that's why I say we may be revising this. Yeah. Maybe early in the new year. We'll kind of wait and see. But all along, we've assumed, now if it's negative, that's a different thing, but we've assumed zero growth in the energy sector. That 2.3% growth comes from those other sectors that are actually doing pretty well. When you get 4, 5, or 6 of these small sectors, but they're all pushing the boulder in the same direction, then you start to see that moderate rate of growth, even with an energy sector that is flatlined.
Yeah.
But to your point, Jackie, if we start to see declines, you know, then that 2.3% growth in those smaller sectors, that gets eroded.
Yeah, that gets eroded pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Well, what percentage of our economy is oil and gas?
Depending on the year and the price, but it's anywhere between 20 and 25%.
Yeah, so that's good.
It's significant.
And like you say, there's those ripple effects where, you know, sure, something that's manufacturing is actually related to oil
that's
and
right.
gas.
Yeah, the multiplier effects, and particularly in rural parts of the province, is very significant.
Almost every sector is touched by the energy sector in some way. The only one that I can really identify that is counter-cyclical, tourism, actually does well when energy prices tank. It tends to push the Canadian dollar low, and it tends to reduce transportation costs, which is net positive for tourism and also agriculture.
And maybe counter-cyclical to cannabis.
Yeah, how much economic growth is going to come from cannabis, Todd?
In 2019, we don't have an explicit number in there, and we don't think it's going to be huge, but we think that will be a growing number over, you know, the next 2 or 3 years as it starts to ramp up, especially production, and we start to see more diversity in the kinds of retail products that are being sold.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the cannabis is an example of industries that actually can flourish here, pardon the pun, in a sense that they use a lot of energy in these greenhouses, right? Like natural gas and stuff like that. And we have some of the lowest natural gas prices in the world.
That's right. And a lot of sunshine.
And so if we think about the resources that we have, such abundance in this province, it's amazing, right? And we do have these problems here with the low prices and the differentials, but we can also think differently. If we have abundance of oil, gas, sunshine, wind, and which make agriculture, as we talked about earlier, but it's also input into secondary, tertiary industries. So we've got some pretty good announcements that are popping up here, right,
Jeff? Yeah, and I'll just name a few. We've got, now this is just a proposed project, but a company called Nautical converting cheap natural gas, we have lots of that, into methanol in Grand Prairie. It's a $2 billion project they're estimating. So they're in the process of filing their regulatory work right now. Interpipeline Fund is moving forward. They actually have it under construction, a propane dehydrogenation project near Edmonton for $2 billion. Pembina's also considering one. We had a refinery announcement even a few months ago. This one, a partnership of Sinopec and an Alberta Indigenous group that's considering building a refinery. Now, it's early days, but they would value that project at $8.5 billion. So these are significant numbers. Just to put it in context, we talked on our recent podcast about Imperial sanctioning a new oil sands project, first time in 5 years. That was a $2 billion project. So these value-added opportunities are substantial.
And it is one of those odd benefits, if I can use that word, I don't know, but with lower oil prices, with this malaise hanging over the energy sector, the benefit is some of these other projects now make more sense because now you can actually hire people to work, you know, to construct them. Whereas 5 years ago, the energy sector, you know, it becomes this black hole that pulls everything into it and escalates wages and causes all kinds of labor shortages, especially in the skilled trades. So now in 2018, 2019, we're seeing far less pressure on that construction sector. There's a lot of available construction workers around and wages, you don't have to back up the money truck to get them. So that tilts the balance in favor of these new kinds of projects, especially the ones that are not necessarily related to the energy sector, but
other sectors. They feed off the energy sector, which is really an important thing, because if we recognize, and we've talked about this in previous podcasts, that we have shifted from an era of energy scarcity, you know, which we see price always going up, 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 and up. And in the last 3-4 years, we are now faced with energy abundance because we've effectively become so good at getting this stuff out of the ground at lower prices.
It's getting a glut. Yeah.
It forces you to think, well, okay, what can I do with that?
Yeah.
And if I believe that to be sustained, then I will invest money in a methanol plant which can rely on cheap, long-term natural gas.
Right. Yeah, these are 20-plus-year investments.
Refinery. I mean, it changes the economics of all of these things again.
I think you're going to see a lot more. I mean, I think 2019 could be the turning point for hopefully attracting more of these sorts of valued added opportunities to diversify our economy further, because these provide the stable kind of employment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is that more diverse economy is that this is, you know, for 40 years, this has been the holy grail for Alberta and for policymakers is how do we diversify our economy? And there's been all sorts of, you know, attempts by government, you know, policy-driven attempts to do this and, you know, very weak results on any of them.
Yeah.
I think if we're going to see more diversity, it's going to be organic, but it is going to come with more available labor, with cheaper feedstock on the resources, that is what's going to create the diversity.
And I mean, I think in this instance here, the lack of inflationary forces, particularly inflation,
that's right,
is a positive to be able to attract these other industries to come and set up shop here.
Yeah, and that is so important. I remember I actually worked on a big research project in a paper back in the boom days. And at that time, building a project, whether it be a refinery or a petrochemical plant, would easily be, you know, 1.8 times more expensive than it would be in the Gulf Coast. And so even though we had low feedstock costs, you couldn't get over that hurdle with the capital cost being so high. You just didn't have the profitability to pay that off. But as we see the labor rates come down, we don't have the inflation, our engineering and procurement companies are more eager to get work, you're starting to see more competitiveness. And that can be that's as important as the low feedstock costs, is getting those capital costs down. And a great example of that would be this LNG Canada project.
Right.
So LNG Canada put their project on hold around, I think, 2016. They spent a year working with the EPC companies to redesign the project to make it cheaper. In the end, when they announced the project here a couple of months ago, they actually got a lump sum contract. So that basically means the engineering contractor is willing to build this project at a fixed price.
Right.
And that's unheard of. Like, that would have never happened in the history of Alberta mega projects because it was too risky, you know, because of the labor inflation, the limited labor resources. You couldn't see an engineering contractor take that risk. Well, here we have that example. And if that model takes hold, it really increases the chances, I think, of some of these other projects, because you get rid of that massive risk of building in Alberta because, you know, you don't have unlimited cash flows here. So if your capital cost goes up 20-30%, suddenly your project doesn't have a return. So you get rid of that risk.
So, I mean, this is the optimistic side, longer term. Right? It's not going to happen overnight. But I think that there's, you know, amidst all the doom and gloom, and believe me, there's plenty of doom and gloom walking around right now. But I think that between recognizing that the differentials have to narrow by virtue of the arbitrage forces at play, we talked about that in previous podcasts, recognizing that we just have an incredible base of resources here in this province, whether it's agriculture, oil, gas, wind, sun, you name it.
And people.
And people.
Because Todd just told me they're not leaving, and they've got lots of great skills.
And we've got a highly educated, young entrepreneurial workforce.
Yeah. So that's amazing. So Todd Hirsch, thank you so much for coming from ATB Financial. How's your book doing?
The book is going great. In fact, we're sold out of the first print run, but we're going to be doing a second print run on the
book.
So
that's Spiders in Space.
Spiders in Space, Successfully Adapting to Unwanted Change. How do you adapt when change comes very abruptly? Sometimes just a matter of a phone call. And everything you thought you knew about your business model or your life changes instantly.
Well, how appropriate. So encourage all of you to read it. And thanks again for coming.
Yeah,
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.